Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Ringside Chaos, the professional wrestling discussion segment of the Bear of Texas podcast. The only professional wrestling podcast in the world where pro wrestling is discussed passionately, with confidence, with great knowledge, and most of all, in the most sophisticated way. So brace yourselves, ladies and gentlemen, because chaos is about to be unleashed. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Ringside Chaos, the professional wrestling discussion segment of the Bear of Texas podcast and Pain Train Pipe Bomb Productions. My name is Alex Alcazaz, a.k.a. the Bear of Texas. And ladies and gentlemen, today I want to dedicate an episode to the memory of none other than Mr. Brody Lee. You know, 2 days ago was the two-year anniversary of Mr. Brody Lee's death. And I'll be honest with you folks, when I saw that Brody Lee had passed away, emotions were so badly overwhelming that I'll be extremely honest with you, I broke down into tears and I did cry like a baby, because Mr. Brody Lee, like many other wrestlers, was simply a wrestler that was beyond committed and dedicated to the business. He absolutely adored the professional wrestling business. The professional wrestling business was just more than simply what he did for a living, it was his life. And for me, as a professional wrestling fan that totally respects all that, you know, and as a wrestling fan that's been super supportive of Brody Lee as a wrestler and everything that WWE could have done with him and, you know, everything that he could have shown and, you know, offered for the wrestling business, you know, for me, I wasn't just a fan of Brody Lee himself, like in character. I strongly respected him, you know, as a human being. Like, I had a lot of respect for Jonathan Huber. You know, that's Mr. Brody Lee's real name. So basically, I had a lot of respect for Brody Lee, Luke Harper, and of course, Mr. Jonathan Huber. So when Jonathan Huber, of course, as we know, Mr. Brody Lee, the Exalted One, the leader of the Dark Order, when he passed away, I mean, the professional wrestling business, you know, part of the wrestling business died along with it. So, and when I broke down into tears, and when I actually told my mom, and I told her how Mr. Brody Lee, how Jonathan Huber was so beloved in the locker room, you know, and how he was so greatly appreciated by the wrestling fan base, you know, a lot of wrestling fans, I'm sure, were deeply affected by his death. You know, he died December 26, 2020. He was only 41 years old, died of idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. And I really don't know anything about, like, about this supposed idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, but but from what I understand, it's a rare, like, illness of the respiratory system, and it's characterized by, I think, like, you know, thickening and stiffening of the lung tissue, and so it's kind of like a scarring lung disease, according to some of my research, and it's kind of basically an irreversible decline in lung function. So, you know, and I had noticed, you know, when he dropped the belt, he was a TNT champion, when he dropped the belt and then was hospitalized for undisclosed illness, when I saw that news, and then when he had passed away, and then when the cause of death was revealed, I said to myself, no wonder. Because, you know, as we know, the whole thing in AEW, you know, with him holding the TNT title, which we'll get to, but, you know, again, this is going to be a dedicated episode, so we'll talk about his days in the WWE and pre-WWE. So, you know, losing Jonathan Huber, whether you want to, you know, with Luke Harper, Brody Lee, Mr. Brody Lee, Jonathan Huber, we lost a tremendous human being and one of the most underrated professional wrestlers in the history of the business. He is gone, but ladies and gentlemen, he is not forgotten. God rest his amazing soul. And now I'm starting to get emotional. So, You know, I had not heard of him until he arrived in WWE, which was in 2012. You know, before then, you know, he started his debut in 2003. You know, and like, you know, a lot of wrestlers, you know, Mr. Brody Lee started out as a backyard wrestler. He was actually known as Huber Boy Number 2 at the time. You know, he was trained by, he was even trained by, you know, one of the three wrestlers who trained him was Tony Mamaluke, who, of course, we know in WWE was Nunzio. Same thing with ECW. He had made his debut in October 7th of 2003. And, you know, from 2007 to 2012, he worked for an independent promotion, which I believe is based in Philadelphia, called Chikara. And even with another promotion called the Square Circle Wrestling, and, you know, was all over the independent circuit. You know, I think from 2009 to 2011, he worked for a professional wrestling company known as Jersey All Pro Wrestling before he was finally signed to WWE. And, you know, I think there was a story one time when he told that he had numerous tryouts with WWE, like, over the years, but none of them quite made it through, or, you know, I guess none of them were successful. And then I think he was at a point where he was kind of basically moving on from WWE because, you know, it came to the point where he was already into his 30s, so he felt that he would never get a tryout again, and he did. But and I think in the story he says that he didn't hear back from John Laurinaitis, but eventually John Laurinaitis called him. But I think in that interview he said that the voicemail, like, cut off, you know, when John Laurinaitis was giving his phone number. So Brody Lee, Jonathan Huber, called his good friend Claudio Castagnoli, and Brody Lee, I mean, they knew each other working, you know, in Chikara and all the and the indies around. So he called Claudio and asked him for John Laurinaitis' number, and then after that it was history. And then he had finally arrived in WWE, and, you know, he was in NXT, and of course, you know, he was part of the Wyatt family, and the whole thing with the Wyatt family, you know, it was great. So I think, you know, when he was first introduced, you know, in the Wyatt family, I think he was, Bray Wyatt introduced him as one of his sons. They did capture the NXT titles and held them for a brief period. You know, when they started out in 2012, you know, of course, you know, he was not Brody Lee. He was under the name Luke Harper. And I think at first, when he first signed with WWE in March of 2012, NXT was not established yet. It was still Florida Championship Wrestling. And then it was in August of 2012 when Florida Championship Wrestling was rebranded as NXT, and then he made his television debut on the November 7th episode of NXT. Excuse me. When Bray Wyatt introduced Harper as his first son. And then, of course, Eric Rowan would soon be introduced, and then, you know, Wyatt labeled him as his second son. So then that's how we saw the beginning of the tag team between Eric Rowan and Luke Harper, which I felt was definitely a very underrated tag team. And, you know, on the in January of 2013, when they started the NXT Tag Team Championship Tournament, you know, Harper and Rowan, you know, eventually made it to the final. I forgot who they beat. I believe they actually defeated. I forgot who the team was, but I know that Adrian Neville, who of course went on to be just simply known as Neville, or is, you know, he's known as Pac today, you know, in AEW. Although when they won it, of course, I thought there was definitely something huge. I mean, I was not a huge follower of NXT at the time, but I was reading a lot of the recaps. You know, my younger brother Adrian, who loved NXT when it was first getting started, a lot of my wrestling friends in college were really on to me and says, "Man, you really got to catch up on NXT." You know, and I was not catching the shows, but I was watching the recaps and everything, and I was, you know, watching whatever there was on YouTube and reading whatever articles they had. So they captured the titles, and I think they held them for about 50 days. When eventually they lost them to Neville and Corey Graves, which was in July of 2013. And, you know, I think basically when they lost the titles, because I think in May, like a month prior to them losing the NXT titles, tag team titles, WWE started releasing these vignettes to promote the Wyatt family. So obviously, with the Wyatt family being promoted to the main roster, of course they're going to have Rowan and Harper drop the belts. You know, that's part of the thing. The old school wrestling philosophy right there. When a wrestler is leaving a territory or whatever, you lose on the way out. I learned that from Jim Cornette, believe it or not, in that episode of Dark Side of the Ring on the Montreal Screwdrop episode. So originally, so the vignettes I thought were pretty cool. And on July 8th, the Wyatt family actually debuted when they attacked Kane. And then I think in their first match when Harper and Rowan, you know, they defeated Brodus Clay and Tensai, who are known as Tons of Funk. And then, you know, after that, you know, there was just, you know, they were going on a winning streak. And I'm telling you, Harper working with Rowan, I felt was the greatest thing ever. But I'm telling you, Harper himself, I mean, you know, in the previous episode when I spoke about, you know, that when I did an episode about Eric Rowan and his pet spider, you know, I praised the ability of Eric Rowan. And I'm telling you, Rowan and Harper both just so badly, criminally underrated as a team. But, you know, Jonathan Huber, Harper, Brody Lee himself, I mean, you want to talk about criminally underrated? I feel that Jonathan Huber as a wrestler, whether he was Luke Harper or Brody Lee, so badly criminally underrated. I mean, excellent wrestling skills, you know, just incredible. Absolutely incredible. So the tag team lasted for a while, and then, I'll never forget when Harper and Rowan, my favorite feud with them, I think was with the Usos, and this was at the same time that John Cena was feuding with Bray Wyatt. So I'll never forget, like, you know, when Harper and Rowan, they were put in the WWE tag team title picture when they unsuccessfully challenged the Usos twice. It was at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view as well as Battleground in 2014. You know, I kind of feel like the summer of 2014 was a pretty exciting, you know, especially for the Wyatt family. So even though they didn't actually win the titles, I felt that, you know, the two matches that they had with the Usos challenging them for the titles at Money in the Bank and Battleground in 2014, I felt that both matches were just absolutely tremendous. One of the matches that will actually, believe it or not, if I'm correct, was actually a 2 out of 3 falls match. And that match was tremendous. So after the feud with the Usos, after that, I'm not sure exactly, I don't really remember, but then all of a sudden, you know, in late September of 2014, all of a sudden, WWE started releasing these promotional vignettes of Harper and Rowan being set free. And I'll never forget, the one with Harper being set free, I mean, that particular video package is one of the greatest things I've ever seen in professional wrestling. And, you know, and going back to how great Luke Harper is, I mean, one of my favorite things that he did was how he, it was the yeah chant, how he would go, yeah. I mean, the yeah chants that Luke Harper did, you know, I wonder if he did them previously when he was Brody Lee in the Indies. I'm not entirely sure, but, you know, that's one of the many things I loved about Harper, how he would do those brilliant yeah chants. If you've watched him, I mean, you know just how special it was. But, you know, I try my best to try to imitate that chant, but I'll be honest with you, mine is so bad, it's just, you know, it's unbelievable. So after he was basically, you know, quote, set free in storyline, so basically WWE creative management obviously decided to split up the Wyatt family. So during those vignettes, I mean, Harper was off of television for a little bit. Because keep in mind, it was in the beginning of September, it was at the end of September, rather. So, and then I'll never forget, in early November, Harper returned to television when he threw Dolph Ziggler, and when Triple H and Stephanie McMahon were in their office, and this was, you know, when the Authority was kind of running the show, and this was part of the build-up to the Survivor Series of 2014, Team Cena versus Team Authority. And Team Authority was, you know, going around recruiting members, you know, recruiting heel wrestlers to join their team. And I'll never forget, in one episode at the end of the show, when Harper threw an unconscious Dolph Ziggler at Triple H and Stephanie, and he said, and I quote, "I'm a team player." And I mean, the way Harper just said that, and the way, like, you know, his facial expressions, the way he just put himself out there, you know, when he said what he said, I mean, absolutely brilliant. I mean, he tells Triple H and Stephanie that I'm a team player. I mean, basically he says, well, very likely he's going to join Team Authority. And then that following week, he did officially join Team Authority. And that very same night, he won the Intercontinental Championship from Dolph Ziggler, which honestly, definitely didn't expect. But I felt like, you know, Harper, you know, getting a singles run, you know, and having the Intercontinental title placed on him, personally, I felt that was great because, again, I admired him, you know, for his skills and everything we've seen so far. And since I felt that Harper and Roan were great as a team along with the Wyatts, I was really curious to see, well, let's see what kind of magic he can create as a singles wrestler. And I was pretty excited. So he won the Intercontinental title, but then, you know, Team Cena ended up winning at Survivor Series. You know, and I'll never forget, you know, like that. But then I think basically at TLC later in December, he actually lost the title. So I kind of felt like his title reign being only 27 days. I'll be honest with you, that I did not like very well. But you know, for those of you out there, you know, and I'll talk about this in a little bit, how in an interview on Talk Is Jericho, how Harper basically spoke about the title run. He basically said that, you know, he never won a match on TV with the belt, lost a lot of times by getting disqualified. So now that you think about it, I mean, him losing the belt because, you know, they put the belt on him and then he wasn't winning, he didn't win a match on TV with the belt, it did not make any sense from a creative perspective. And for me, you know, in a fan perspective and a huge admirer of Harper, you know, Jonathan Huber, Brody Lee, you know, it made no sense. So, but then I was afraid that him dropping the belt, you know, and that ladder match, and that ladder match with Dolph Ziggler was amazing. So even though he lost the belt, I mean, the match was still great, but, you know, fans were still behind him. I mean, I definitely was. And then I was so grateful that, you know, the 7-man ladder match at WrestleMania 31, that he was part of it. I mean, that's how he ignited his feud with Dean Ambrose, who, of course, as we know, is Jon Moxley. You know, I'll be honest, believe it or not, I was actually really hoping. I mean, Daniel Bryan won the match, which I was happy with. But I'll be honest with you, had Harper won that match at WrestleMania, regained the Intercontinental title, winning the 7-man ladder match, I would have been just absolutely overjoyed. Absolutely overjoyed because, you know, for me, I'm beyond a vocal supporter and admirer of Harper. I mean, I'm just beyond that. I mean, it's hard to explain. But, you know, he didn't win the match, but then the feud with him and Dean Ambrose, I think, led to that Chicago street fight, which was, I believe, at Extreme Rules. I'll never forget, you know, the match started out in the ring. They both, you know, they both fought backstage. They even got into a car and drove away, and I'll never forget that. But Brody Lee, when Huber said in his interview with Chris Jericho, he said that, you know, when he pitched a couple of characters, you know, which I'll get to in a little bit, I mean, you know, he wasn't winning any matches. I mean, Harper was constantly losing. So I felt that creative was really just, they were burying him as a singles wrestler. And then not long after the feud with Dean Ambrose, you know, they put Harper back with Roan, and eventually the Wyatt family, you know, fully reunited. So I kind of feel like, so honestly, dissolving the Wyatt family, I think, in the first place was definitely a failed experiment. It could have been better in Huber's case had creative only done things correctly, had booked Harper correctly as a singles wrestler, because without a doubt in my mind, Harper would have been a fantastic singles wrestler if only creative had been able to book him properly. So eventually in May, he's reunited with Roan, the Wyatt family's back, And then eventually, you know, Braun Strowman eventually joined the Wyatt family. So, and then, you know, of course, I'll never forget when Randy Orton also became part of it. But you know, there was that time, I think it was in March 2016, when Harper actually suffered a knee injury, which was in a dark match, and he was actually out for 6 months. And I think the injury was, you know, he injured his patella and suffered a torn medial patellofemoral ligament. I actually had to research that. So he's out for a while, but then, you know, when Randy Orton joined the Wyatt family, you know, they won the tag team titles, but of course, you know, under the Freebird rule, Harper was actually recognized as a champion as well. So I don't, you know, I really don't know after that, but then moving forward, you know, with the whole thing, you know, he was going from like 2015 to 2017. We really didn't see too much. I mean, for me, I didn't even like what I was seeing as far as you know, the booking with Harper. But then, you know, Harper, I think, disappeared from television for a while. This is after WrestleMania 33, And then, you know, October 10th, you know, this is where we saw him with Rowan again, but this time it was nothing related to the Wyatt family. This was like a complete repackage. This is when they were known as the Bludgeon Brothers, and Luke Harper was just basically simply known as Harper at that point. So then, you know, eventually the Bludgeon Brothers would you know, feud with the Usos, the New Day, and I think, you know, eventually at WrestleMania 34, they captured the WWE Tag Team titles. I believe it was in a Fatal 4-Way Tag Team match. But, yeah, it was at WrestleMania 34, but it was actually either a Fatal 4-Way or a Triple Threat. I think they wanted a match. If it was Fatal 4-Way, I believe it was against the New Day, the Usos, and Gallows and Anderson. So, I don't quite remember, but... But eventually, they did lose the belts to the New Day, which was in August. And I believe, and the reason why, it was because the next day, it was announced that Rowan actually had suffered a torn right bicep. So they obviously had to split the team. And the team was on hiatus, but I think, you know, as a result of the injury, Harper actually also disappeared from television. So then after, you know, 2018 and 2019, we really just didn't see really much of him. I'll never forget when I heard the story that, you know, in September of, I think, 2018, he actually made a surprise appearance at NXT when he unsuccessfully challenged for the NXT North American Championship, who I believe Ricochet was the champion at the time. But then, you know, not long after that, you know, Harper had to go on another hiatus because of an injury. And then... And then after that, we really just didn't see much. I mean... At WrestleMania 35, he was in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, but he didn't win. And then, apparently, according to some sources, like, there was a match he had a match, and then Vince, there was that story that Vince McMahon did not like the match, and apparently there were some creative plans for Harper to have a huge feud with Sami Zayn, but Vince McMahon was so unimpressed that it was canceled. And then, you know, immediately after, Harper requested a release from WWE. But the problem is, you know, Harper had not been on WWE television programming for a long time. And so he requested his release, but it was denied. And I think, you know, his contract was supposed to expire in November of 2019. But, you know, because of the time he missed during an injury, WWE actually added an additional couple of months. So, you know, because for a while, Harper was basically, if I remember correctly, he was just sitting at home. So, obviously, he felt that, you know, he wanted out of the company, but they just didn't do it. But you know, he was eventually released from WWE in December of 2019. And so, when that happened with AEW, you know, just really rising and rising and rising, I really felt that, you know, it was only going to be a matter of time before he made it to AEW. So, here we go. But before I get too deep into that, so going back to that interview with Chris Jericho, you know, he mentioned that, again, you know, when he had the Intercontinental title, he had it for 27 days, and he mentioned, you know, he never won a match on television with a belt, and he did a lot of DQs, you know, like he said, and I strongly suggest listening to that episode. But, you know, he remembers, like, you know, he pitched a lot of ideas, you know, and, you know, specifically two of them. And that he pitched to Vince McMahon and WWE Creative Direction, which they didn't like. But because he mentions that Vince McMahon saw him, you know, again, you know, as he said in the interview, you know, Jonathan Huber mentions that Vince McMahon saw him as a, quote, backwoods hillbilly that spoke in a very southern accent. So... Which, you know, because part of the whole Wyatt family, you know, of course, you know, that's why, you know, of course Vince McMahon would envision Harper as something like that. But, you know, Huber mentioned that he mentioned like an idea of him, you know, basically partaking in a gimmick to where he was a collector. Because, you know, he says, you know, in that interview, he says, you know, Harper, you know, was kind of very much into serial killers just like me. So he pitched an idea that he was like, you know, he would like collect something from every opponent that he beat, you know, kind of like how a serial killer does. You know, a serial killer will kill somebody, and serial killers actually take trophies with them. So it makes sense, and I felt that character definitely would have worked. But, you know, and also another character that he mentioned was, quote, an intelligent monster. And he even mentioned that he would look exactly the same way he did with the Wyatts, but he would speak more, but speak in a very intelligent and eloquent way. You know, I think he mentioned like almost like being like a supposed Bruce or Brody-like character. Now, honestly, I would have probably preferred the collector gimmick, but I felt like the intelligent monster persona certainly would have fit him quite well. But it's a shame that they rejected it, because I felt that it could have worked, so as long as creative direction would have booked it properly. But the problem is, especially during that time, you couldn't really trust you couldn't really trust the creative direction. So, I mean, it's a shame. So, you know, and he even mentions it as part of the interview that, you know, Vince McMahon wanted him to talk in a southern accent, but, you know, if he tells Vince McMahon that, you know, he's from Rochester, New York, but, you know, he tries it and it didn't sound good, and, you know, of course, then after that, you know, all of his ideas were rejected, and it's a damn shame, because, you know, I feel like, you know, him either being the intelligent monster or having the collector gimmick would have worked. But he also mentions in that interview, the collector gimmick, you know, he said the problem was that he wasn't beating anybody, so how can he collect something if he's not beating anybody? So, and that makes perfect sense, but also it also proves just how poor the booking was on Harper. I mean, I think it's so poor that it's, you know, it's an absolute travesty of justice, really. I mean, it's criminal how poorly treated he was, you know, with his booking. I mean, WWE could have, you know, he could have done so well if only they had given him the chance. But the problem is, Vince McMahon just wasn't going to go with it. And I feel like it's a loss on WWE's side. I mean, it definitely affected Harper himself. But overall, he could have done a whole lot for the company if they had only given him the chance. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, these are just merely my opinions. But honestly, again, we all of us wrestling fans, you know, have our opinions. So, at the end of the day, anything I say is just merely my opinion. But when we finally saw him go to All Elite Wrestling, that's when things just, you know, really, you know, got exciting, because, you know, I knew that the Brody Lee character was definitely gonna come back, you know, in November of 2019, when he actually filed the trademark, you know, for the Brody Lee character. You know, I really figured that, you know, now that he has control over it and he goes to AEW, he can actually readopt the Brody Lee persona and use it to his personal interest in AEW, and he can certainly give the fans what the fans would want, and he would actually be able to actually wrestle, you know, with creative freedom. So, you know, it was heavily rumored, you know, I think starting in March, you know, it was heavily reported that he was coming, and AEW was actually going to have a match in his hometown of Rochester, New York. But of course, you know, the pandemic happened, and that was ruined. So, you know, of course, you know, there was, you know, the Dark Order was emerging in AEW programming, and there was all this talk about an anonymous, unseen leader of the faction. But then, you know, all these talks, you know, week after week with Evil Uno, you know, eventually Brody Lee made his debut, and he was actually revealed as the Exalted One. So, honestly, and I felt that was definitely the best way to bring him in. So, you know, the Dark Order was just rising and rising and rising. I mean, they were, you know, I remember, you know, all over social media and these vignettes, it was the Join the Dark Order thing. So Brody Lee arrives. You know, he's basically, you know, introduced as the Exalted One. He starts going on a rampage every week. He starts recruiting members into the Dark Order. The likes of, you know, Colt Cabana was one of them. So he goes undefeated. He attacks Jon Moxley and issues a challenge for the AEW World Championship, which was going to take place at the Double or Nothing pay-per-view. But, you know, he did come up short. And I kind of figure, you know, he goes undefeated. He's making an impact. He unsuccessfully challenges for the belt. And I felt that was honestly the wrong move. So, because I felt like, you know, him losing to Jon Moxley was certainly going to affect his status. But in August of 2020, you know, when he quickly defeated Cody in a squash match to win the AEW TNT Championship, you know, I really felt that was actually one of the greatest moments I've seen, you know, with him. You know, I was happy for him. And, you know, of course, that story how Cody even, you know, said that he was willing to lose like that just to put him over. I mean, see, I'm sure that a lot of wrestlers were pissed off just how poorly booked he was in WWE, and they knew that if you just let him, if you give him the ball, if you trust him, if you do things right with him, you know, everything's going to work out well. So that was clearly the case, but, you know, so he wins the title, and it kind of seems that the Dark Order is truly on top of the world. So he held the belt, you know, for a little bit, you know, not too long. Obviously, originally, the plan was for him to hold the belt longer, but then, of course, you know, when he lost it, there was that report of, you know, him being diagnosed, I think, with an injury, but we didn't know what it was because it was still undisclosed. So he went on hiatus. So after winning the title in August of 2020, you know, the likes of, you know, Cody's allies, you know, the likes of QT Marshalls, Dustin Rhodes, they were attacked, you know, by him and the Dark Order. So the likes of, you know, Lee would then successfully defend the title against, you know, Rhodes, Orange Cassidy. You know, he was definitely getting some, he has the title and he's winning matches on TV. Now, unfortunately, because of the pandemic, there was not an audience there. So after that, you know, soon after Cody returns, and then Brody Lee issued the challenge, you know, to a dog collar match for the title, which actually took place October 7th, which turned out to be Brody Lee's final match, you know, in his career. So he lost the title. Now, the title reign, official reign, is at 55 days, but according to my research, the reign is actually recognized at 46 days because of tape delay. So he loses the match, and then immediately after, he disappears from television, and then he was on hiatus because, you know, it was reported to be an undisclosed injury, but we didn't see him after that. So after he went on hiatus, it was because, you know, all of a sudden he was starting to have health problems, which was related to what eventually, you know, which what he eventually died of. So honestly, really, me as a huge admirer and fan of Jonathan Huber, Brody Lee, and Luke Harper, one of the, you know, this makes me extremely sad. I mean, because number one, it's unfortunate that during his time in AEW, because of the freaking pandemic and the lockdown and all that, he never got to perform for AEW in front of a full sold-out audience, you know, in front of a sold-out house, which makes me cry. But at the same time, for me, even despite that, he still had a hell of a run in AEW. The fans got to watch him, you know, be himself. That's why I would say, with all that creative control, the creative freedom, with him being Brody Lee and everything, we finally got to see the talent that he truly was. I mean, AEW really gave him that. They really gave him the chance. Tony Khan really told him. I mean, for me, I would have, you know, if I was Tony Khan, I would have simply told Jonathan Huber, be Brody Lee, be the best Brody Lee you can. Do it for the audience. Do it for the wrestling fan base. And that's exactly what we saw. So I think that if it wasn't for that injury, if it wasn't for those health problems that eventually, which he eventually died from, I have actually no doubt in my mind that he would have held the title longer. But, you know, unfortunately, because, you know, after he was immediately hospitalized, I think, after that. So, you know, and the saddest part is, you know, he died 10 days after his 41st birthday. So, you know, and this was actually in October. So he was actually hospitalized in October. So, and at first we thought that that he had some sort of illness that was actually related to the COVID-19 virus, but according to reports, he had tested negative numerous times, and then he had checked in the hospital in October, and then, you know, just not long after, he was moved to the ICU, and then you know, it was his widow. She revealed in January of 2021 on the AEW Unrestricted podcast that he had died from idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, which again is a rare condition which causes the lung tissue to become irreversibly thickened, and the lungs can no longer function. So it's a damn shame, really. It really is. Because again, you know, when I found that he died, you know, it affected me so much. I mean, a lot of wrestling fans, much like me, were simply affected. So, but you know, basically 2 days ago, again, was the 2-year anniversary of his death. And I just really wanted to take the time to come here to basically say how much I appreciated him, kind of go through his career, you know, kind of like do like a little tribute episode. And honestly, I felt like, you know, I had to do it now because, you know, I could have done this, you know, I come home from work late, but you know what? I'm going to do this now and I'm going to get it over with. And man, but words just cannot express how much I appreciated his wrestling ability, his commitment and dedication to the wrestling business, to entertaining the fans. Brody Lee, Luke Harper, Jonathan Huber, rest in peace. God rest your amazing soul. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for everything that you did for the professional wrestling business. And I think that every single wrestling fan today will agree that everything that he has done in his career, from AEW to WWE to the independent circuit, whether he was Brody Lee, Mr. Brody Lee, Luke Harper, whether he was part of the Wyatt family, the leader of the Dark Order, everything that Jonathan Huber did in the professional wrestling business still has an impact on the business today, and it's going to have an impact on the business forever. Ladies and gentlemen, I can promise you that. Ladies and gentlemen, this show, Ringside Chaos, is available on all streaming platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and YouTube. And remember, if you know somebody that loves professional wrestling and they are looking for a very exciting and unique professional wrestling podcast, this show, Ringside Chaos, is the show for them. Thank y'all very, very much, and Happy New Year, everybody. And Brody Lee, God rest your amazing soul, gone but not forgotten. Happy New Year, everybody.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.